Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time flies, for our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's an opportunity for you to get your questions to us. You can email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And yours truly, along with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, will attempt to answer them. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. Trying to stay cool. How about you?
Trying to stay cool. Yeah, you know, finally, I mean, we had a pretty merciful spring, but now we're in the throes of summer and a summer heat wave. But hey, it's not too bad because at least it's not 110 or whatever, you know,
exactly.
118 or, you know, some of those temperatures out west are pretty up there. Yeah. But they say it's the humidity. It's the humidity. And there's nothing like New York City humidity in midsummer. So, anyway.
Right. The dry heat is supposed to be different, but what do we know? We're not in Arizona, you know.
Exactly. Okay. So, you know, I'll take a cool breeze off the Hudson or the East River any day. The only challenge is that on these super hot days, if you want to go outside to run, you got to get up pretty darn early because it gets, when the sun just comes up, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning or something is the time to get out there and run because the temperature is near 80 if you get out there like a lazy bones at 8 or 9. Or alternatively, go inside and exercise on the treadmill and air conditioning. Or, what I did this morning is, you know, take a swim. And it's always cool in the pool. And, it's an indoor pool. It's at the YMCA.
Always cool in the pool.
You just do laps and get your exercise out of the way and avoid the heat exhaustion. So just before we get to questions, I'll share with you this momentous news. It is now official. The average American woman now weighs more than I do.
Oh, no.
Okay. So, actually, the headline from the Washington Post, I kind of extrapolated to my own weight. But according to the Washington Post, the average American woman now weighs as much as the average 1960s man. All right. What's that? The average American woman weighs 166.2 pounds, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And that's almost exactly as much as the average American man weighed in the early 1960s. If you caught me before I went on the Whole 30 diet around Christmas time, I might have weighed about as much as the average woman. But I just couldn't help it. I did, through this diet, even though I'm, eating a ton of food, I just the pounds melted away and now I'm under 160. According to the study, men are not looking so great either. Over the same time period, the average man has gained nearly 30 pounds from 166.3 in the 60s to 195.5 today. All right. So today's average man weighs almost as much as 1.5 American women from the 60s, if you do the math.
Yeah.
That's a lot of man.
Only a few years ago that the average American woman is about 5'4", weighs 140 pounds.
Yeah.
Or was it 146 pounds?
Which is a little too heavy. But
wow, it's changed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and let's do an international comparison. Americans are now the world's third heaviest people. They're behind two Pacific Island nations, which are famous for, they actually export sumo wrestlers to Japan. These are the islands of Tonga and Micronesia. And they're just famous for some reason, they also seem to get, from places like Fiji. Some of the football linemen are actually from those Pacific Island nations because they have a heavy starch diet. They're eating Spam and poi. They put on a lot of weight, a lot of white rice. Mm-hmm. The average American is 33 pounds heavier than the average Frenchman. Okay.
Wow.
And look at what the French eat, right? I mean, they're not exactly sparing in their, intake
of
pâté, They're 70 pounds heavier than the average citizen of Bangladesh. They play around with these statistics, kind of fun. It takes 20 Bangladeshis to reach 1 ton of mass, but only 12 Americans.
Oh, my gosh. And how many Americans to screw in a light bulb? Sorry, no. So, wait. Our country is the next up to help support sumo wrestling?
Yeah, we're certainly candidates. I mean, if we were fit enough, I don't even know if we're fit enough to compete in, with the Japanese. But, I mean, look, it's a disturbing trend. But, hey, let's see what's happened since the 1966 they're talking about. 1966 was the advent of the low-fat craze, which began in really in full full force in the 1970s. You know, we went towards a lot of whole grains. Meat and saturated fat are bad for you if you go through the history. And it's been a really interesting science fair experiment.
Vegetable oil was in.
Polyunsaturated fat. Yep. You know, was you know, have lots of corn oil, mazola, margarine, so on, so on, so on. And the net result has not been too satisfactory. I mean, if this were a you know, like a an experiment, which unfortunately it is, involving, you know, hundreds of millions of people, it hasn't worked out well.
It has not. It's unfortunate. It seems the obesity crisis is just moving its way forward rather than... You know, I see so many public service announcements on the subway about, take me to go, grab me to go, and you see a picture of a banana or an apple. Take me to go. If you're hungry, you can eat me instead. You know, that kind of a thing. You know, directed more towards children, but even, you know, adults as well. And, wow, it's really something. But, you know, our foods are made to be so, they're so hyper-palatable.
Savory,
that
savory, right.
It becomes very addictive.
Savory, seductive, so it's, and, you know, we think, Americans, I think, are to somewhat, it's a matter of personal responsibility, but we're also victims. We're victims of bad science. We're victims of the food industry, which really tries to seduce us with ever more palatable, delectable foods and, you know, more and more convenient ways to get food. I mean, you don't even have to get up off the sofa. You know, there are apps for this, you know, pizza apps. And, you know, I can't tell you how many delivery people arrive at my apartment. I feel sorry for the delivery people on a snowy day or during a during a rainstorm. But, you know, it's you know, just people just get a lot of takeout these days. So,
And then ease into the takeout coma after that meal.
So, all right. Well, hey, we are definitely on the front lines of, I think, one of the most important battles of modern civilization, which is the battle against poor eating, which leads to obesity and all the consequences of obesity. It's one thing to be overweight, and let's not, you know, look, we don't want to stigmatize people who are, you know, chunky or overweight. I mean, sometimes, you know, I've written an article entitled "It's you know, Reasons Why It's Not Your Fault You're Fat." There's so many different metabolic reasons, ways that we short-circuit our machinery. So, you know, some people are really, really eating very abstemiously, and still they can't reach the requisite weight. Okay. You know, it's the diseases, not how you look in a bathing suit. You know, not everybody can have, you know, awesome chiseled body. Okay, fine. I think we have impossible standards that we've set up for young girls and young men. And that's not good. On the other hand, I'm concerned about the disease toll that this causes, the avoidable diseases that are caused by poor diet and overeating and sedentary lifestyle.
And, you know, if I may mention, medication is not the best answer. You know, even high blood pressure medications, which, of course, we would always recommend anybody with high blood pressure take their medication, but certain classes of high blood pressure medications immediately can cause a person to gain 7 to 15 pounds.
And that was
ridiculous.
That was one of the headings in "It's Reasons Why It's Not Your Fault You're Fat," is the very medications you take can sometimes stymie your weight loss efforts. Okay, enough on that subject because we want to get to questions. It's bad out there, folks. I mean, we got some serious challenges, but hey, we're toiling in the trenches, Layla and I, on a daily basis in the office and via these communications to push back on this very dangerous trend, a trend that threatens our economy, threatens our national security. It used to be
our healthcare system.
It used to be in World War II. A lot of young military recruits were 4F because they couldn't meet the weight requirement. They weren't heavy enough. They were too light. you know, they couldn't carry a pack. They were unhealthy, malnourished. They had to send them to a farm to feed them, and then, you know, they got some square meals, and then they'd be able to hoist a rifle and a pack. Now
that's a different definition to fat farm, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's the opposite. And now what we've got is the opposite. A lot of military recruits they're overweight. They're out of shape. They can't cut it because they can't meet the physical requirements. Anyway, big changes. Okay, so let's get to questions.
Okay, we actually have a comment from Michael. He writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman, I'm a great fan of yours. I truly appreciate your insights about health, diet, and supplementation. Indeed, I've benefited much from them. However, I'm afraid that you've been duped by Dr. Rosenthal."
I knew there'd be a however.
However, you were waiting for that. But
right.
However. We recently interviewed him about his book called Supermind.
Yeah.
The problem is that Dr. Rosenthal is indicating that transcendental meditation is the only form of meditation, and that in order to learn meditation, people must take his trademark course, which costs $1,000. Mm-hmm. I think it's hogwash.
Yeah.
What say you?
Okay. Yeah. I think I respect Michael's viewpoint on this. Let's talk about that podcast. The podcast was on a new book called Supermind by Dr. Rosenthal, who's actually one of the foremost experts on the physiologic effects of meditation. He's a psychiatrist, and he is an avid meditator, and he has adopted the transcendental meditation pathway towards proficiency in meditation. So, in truth, one can just meditate. And in fact, there's something maybe a little bit skeevy about offering what is a wonderful free resource, sort of like air or water exercise as something that you have to take an expensive training course to attain. On the other hand, meditation is not easy to master, and many people take courses to master other proficiencies, you know, whether it be musical proficiency or whether it be exercise proficiency. And nothing is compelling people to do the TM route. However, the book highly favors TM. And fortunately, unfortunately, many of the studies on the efficacy of meditation have been done with TM practitioners. And the reason being is that it's kind of like a quality standard for meditation. It's sort of like, well, you know, you can ask a person, do you meditate? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I meditate. Okay, fine. And then you're enrolled in the study. When you are a TM practitioner, you have probably undergone some training and reached a level of proficiency so that maybe you're not just sitting there cross-legged thinking about your shopping list or or thinking about, you know, what you're going to make for dinner or what programs you're going to watch.
That's the whole point of meditation is to not let your mind wander.
Yeah.
And think about what you're going to have for dinner. You have to be in the now and keep everything quiet and blank.
Yeah. So... I take Michael's point, and look, and by no means do I want to, suggest that TM is the only pathway to supermind or enlightenment. I really thought it was a fascinating interview, and we talk a lot about nutrition, we talk about exercise, we talk even about sleep, we talk about so many aspects of health that I think it's really important from time to time to remind people that it's not all about material efforts. It really is about, we talk about body, mind, and spirit. And spirit, whether it be through altruism, generosity, religious practices, or meditation, is a very, very important ingredient in one's overall health portfolio. So I want to, I was hoping that I would open people up to consideration of some sort of meditative practice, whether it be TM or not. So maybe there should have been a disclaimer. This program does not necessarily constitute an endorsement of TM, But what TM achieves for some individuals is worth pursuing.
Absolutely. And you bring all of these topics to the fore. I mean, it's about being open-minded. It's about investigating everything. So, you know.
You want to hear a quick story about intolerance to TM? I was a student traveling in Europe in 1970, and actually, since I majored in German and I speak some German, I lived and worked in Berlin, and at the time Berlin was divided, and I went on a tour from east to west. At that point, you had to go through Checkpoint Charlie, so the tour bus stopped, and I was sitting there, you know, waiting while they had an East German guard come on the bus to kind of poke around and see what's, you know, who was coming across the border, you know, routine inspection. And as it happened, I had the day before gone to a TM meeting in Berlin, in West Berlin. And there was a little pamphlet that I had in my pocket, and I was sort of routinely going through my pockets while I was waiting for the inspection to happen on the bus. And as the guard made his way down the aisle, you know, a sort of a uniformed East German guard, they call them Vopos, Volkspolizei, I tossed a little piece of paper on the ground. Well, you don't do that in Germany because Germans are very neat and littering is very conspicuous. And so the German guard, the Vopo, said to me in German, and this is my big mistake, as I answered him in German. I should have said, "I don't know what you're saying, you know, I'm just a dumb American." But no, I answered him in German. He said, "Was ist das?" And he's, you know, "What is this?" I said, "Oh, excuse me, that's a little piece of paper that I'm throwing away." And I leaned down to pick it up, and he says, "No, no." And he picked it up, and he looked at it, and his eyes went wide open. And he beckoned to me with his finger, "Kommen Sie mit mir, bitte. Come with me, please."
Oh, that had to be frightening.
And here I was on this bus, and there was all these American tourists on the bus, and I was like a long-haired teenager. And the guy took me off the bus and brought me into a guardhouse. Now, in the guardhouse were all these uniformed Russians and Germans, menacing-looking, with a picture of whoever was the, you know, was it Brezhnev or something like that, you know, like the chairman of the Russian chairman, you know, with a big Soviet star there. And I was interrogated, not, you know, tortured or waterboarded, but I was vigorously questioned as to what was I doing bringing this propaganda into East Germany and what was my purpose in coming and blah, 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 blah. And finally, after about half an hour, they realized I was just an idiot who had thrown a piece of paper on the floor, and I didn't mean to, you know, proselytize the East Germans into TM, because I thought it would be some sort of, you know, it's like an anti-religious communist state. And they said, "Okay, go back on the bus. You're okay." And when I got back on the bus, all the Americans were crating their necks. "What did they do to you in there? What was the problem?" And, you know, I explained it to them. And
oh my God, that's like right out of a movie. Wow.
It was. It was actually one of the more bizarre experiences of my life. But that was my, you know, because I had a passing interest in TM even then, and I went to a meeting. And, you know, I have to admit that, unfortunately, I haven't been consistent in my meditation practice, but that's like one of the things that I would like to, you know, reemphasize in my life, a little more time, maybe, you know, take up photography, painting, you know, guitar, and TM. It'd be good to get back into those things. So that's the story.
Wow. That's really something.
Okay. So what's the next question, please?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, how to follow that? Let's see. We've got an email from Elaine. "Thank you, Dr. Hoffman, for all the excellent information. I subscribe to your newsletter. I listen to you every Saturday. I rely on you for the correct information. I am fighting a battle with arthritis in my legs, and no matter what I take, it doesn't seem to help. I take fish oils, ginger, turmeric leg and vein circulation, vitamin D, methyl B12, CoQ10. Any suggestions? And we have a similar question, which may be part of the answer for Elaine, from Cindy. She asks, regarding anti-inflammatory foods, I read conflicting articles online about the nightshade vegetables causing inflammation and painful joints in some. Is this true?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the scenario that was just described is a typical scenario at the Hoffman Center, because we have very sophisticated patients, and many of, you know, if somebody is just going to get better by taking glucosamine chondroitin, they're not going to come to the Hoffman Center and say, hey, thank you for turning me on to glucosamine chondroitin. I just want to share my gratitude and, you know, have a consult with you to tell me that it's, I'm doing the right thing. So usually we see the problem patients, the non-responders, and of course, I think nutrition is effective but limited in treating all forms of arthritis. You can get partial amelioration or you can get no amelioration because of the severity of the arthritis, or maybe there's some flaw in the diet. I think a lot of people are very strong on taking supplements, but they may not be so strong on diet compliance, and we have no idea what sort of diet this person is following, or have they shared that?
Exactly. So the first thing I would say to Elaine is removing the nightshades is very, very helpful.
Yep.
And let me remind everyone, the nightshade family vegetables are tomatoes and all tomato products, peppers, all peppers, including cayenne and paprika, those spices, eggplant, all white skin, all white flesh potatoes, and tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't want to just remove the nightshades for 2 weeks and then come back to me and say, well, it didn't help.
Exactly.
You need to be off the nightshades for a good 2 to 3 months.
Exactly. Exactly.
For it to make a difference. I mean, not even a half a teaspoon of tomato sauce anywhere.
Right, right.
Or anything like that. And that could be found to be helpful. The other things is, you know, there are all kinds of inflammatory foods and ingredients in the diet that you may not know what you're getting. If you're eating out a lot, if you're getting processed food, there are a lot of vegetable oils, which are very pro-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
There may be food allergies happening.
And I have to say there's something to be said for, there's something to be said for sometimes a vegetarian diet, sometimes but probably gluten-free.
Yes.
And but there's also something to be said for a paleo diet. And I've noticed that while I don't have bad arthritis, hardly any, luckily in my 60s, although my mother had crippling rheumatoid arthritis, I have to say that on a paleo diet, I have less aches and pains. And so the other thing...
And it could very well be what you've eliminated on a paleo diet.
So the other thing that could be said is there are a couple of supplements that I can think of that might be useful here. Did we include UC2, undenatured collagen type 2?
No, definitely.
That could be good.
Definitely UC2. Yes, I would add she's already taking turmeric, boswellia may be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine may need to up her fish oil dose.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Instead of just taking a soft gel or two a day, she may need to double that.
Yep.
Right.
And she could get greater benefits. And, you know, also I think Time Course, as you mentioned, is important because this is a program where she may be discouraged, but over a period of, 2, 3, 5 years, we could see very slow resolution, or at least arresting the progress of this. Now, this is osteoarthritis, is it?
She says arthritis.
Okay, so.
In her legs. I'm imagining it's osteoarthritis.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that could be something. Elaine, best of luck to you, and Cindy, too, removing the nightshades, because they can be a cause of inflammation. It's definitely worth a try for both of you.
Indeed. All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Sorry to regale you with my misadventures as a teenager in Berlin in the 1970s.
That was a terrific story.
You can't make this stuff up. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and in part two, give us a tease to what we're going to address in part two.
Will using my Vitamix, because it breaks up the food particles on a cellular level, will that cause me to get a leaky gut?
Ooh, okay, kind of a wonky question. Let's tackle that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.